now, ladies and gentlemen, the late, great B.B. King.
So let the good times roll.
Yeah.
Let the good times roll. I don't care if you're young or old. Get together and let the good times roll. Don't sit there mumbling, talking trash. If you want to have a bug, you gotta spend some cash and let the good times roll. Let the good times roll.
Now we get to hear from Lucille. Oh, first little audience response. And then we'll hear Lucille.
He was a huge fan of this show. He became.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now here comes Lucille. There are not many musicians, when you hear them playing their guitar or whatever it is that they play, where you can identify them by the sound of their instrument.
Exactly.
But B.B. King was one of those performers. Died last night at the age of 89 years old. True legend of the industry. And like so many other legends of show business, started out in radio at WDIA in Memphis, Tennessee. And you'll notice that he became a legend after he got out of radio.
Yes. And wasn't it last week or the week before we mentioned that he was in hospice at home?
Yeah, in Las Vegas, not doing well. A couple of things I have to say about B.B. King. One is one of the greatest concerts I ever saw in my life was a B.B. King Blues Festival at the Fox Theater here in St. Louis. He did it several years in a row. And my wife and I went there, and Buddy Guy was one of the opening acts. Actually, Buddy Guy stole the show that
night. Yeah.
To me, Buddy Guy, number two on the all-time great blues guitarist list behind B.B. King. But then B.B. came out, and he was fantastic. But at that time, of course, he was in his late 70s already and not as spry, and used to sit down as he performed because he'd gotten to be a very large man and was riddled with all sorts of problems. But it also reminded me of when I saw him when I was 18 or 19 years old, and I didn't know who B.B. King was. And a friend said, let's go to see this concert. And we went to see him in a gymnasium. It was about 3,000 seats, and it was packed. And we had really good seats. I don't know how that happened. We were in like the 10th or 12th row. And I didn't know what to expect. And it wasn't like now, if somebody says, oh, go, you know, why don't you download some of his music or go on YouTube and check him out and decide if you like him.
Yeah.
This is, you know, enough years ago that if you'd never heard of him, you just had to trust somebody when they say, let's go. And B.B. King came out wearing a tuxedo in a gymnasium and backed up by a 10-piece band all in brown or tan suits with ruffle shirts. Like a wedding band almost, but a 10-piece band that included a 3-piece horn section. I've always loved bands that have a horn section.
Yeah,
Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Chicago, Earth, Wind, and Fire, all of those kind of groups always were exciting to me. And so B.B. King comes out there and goes for about 90 minutes nonstop. He tells stories. He launches into one song after another. He lets the different members of his band do solos, and every once in a while he plays a little bit on Lucille, his guitar. And at one point in the show, he says, you know, people ask me why I don't sing and play Lucille at the same time. It's not that I can't do that. Of course I can. It's that when I'm up here on stage, I'm having a conversation with her. First I talk, then she talks. Then I talk, then she talks. And he pauses and he says, sometimes Lucille wants to talk, and I keep my mouth closed.
That's funny.
Do you know the story of why the guitar is named Lucille?
Yes. I've heard that story, but I can't remember what it is.
Here's B.B. King to explain it to you himself in an interview about 10 years ago.
We used to play at this little nightclub, and when it got quite cold there, they would take something that looked like a big garbage pail, half filled it with kerosene, light that fuel, set it in the middle of the dance floor, and that's what we used for heat in winter. Two guys started fighting one night, and one knocked the other one on this container. It spilled on the floor. It looked like a river fire, and everybody started to run for the front door, including B.B. King. But when I got on the outside, I realized then that I'd left my guitar inside. I went back for it. The building was a wooden building, and it started to burn in rapidly. It started to fall in around me. I almost lost my life trying to save my guitar. And the next morning, we found that these two guys was fighting about a lady that worked in the little nightclub. I never did meet her, but I learned that her name was Lucille. I named my guitar Lucille to remind me never to do a thing like that again. That's the true story. That's how it happened.
I love that. You know, James Brown was called the hardest working man in show business. I think B.B. King gave him a pretty good run for his money. There were a couple of years in the late 50s before his career started really taking off where he was doing one-nighters.
Yeah.
He wouldn't come to town and play the Fox Theater on a weekend, on a Friday night, and that would be his gig for the week. In 1 year, he played 347 one-nighters. In 1 year, 365 days in the year, 347 one-nighters in different clubs in different towns.
Wow.
That's hard work. Of course, there is the part of B.B. you also have to talk about, which is the 15 children by 15 women.
Yeah.
The man got around a little bit.
But well, you just said all the different towns he was in. What do you expect?
Yeah,
well,
yeah. Those one-nighters, some of them were really one-nighters.
There's something about a guy with a guitar.
Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Presidential Medal of Freedom, played with the Stones and Jeff Beck and so many others. He's on that U2 song, When Love Comes to Town. They invited him to be a part of that. Lived with type 2 diabetes for a long, long time, and unfortunately we lost the legend B.B. King last night. Now, Colin is here to talk about movies. I'm sorry I took up much of your segment here today, but before you get going, I do want to say in about 15 minutes, I'm going to talk to James Poniewozik from Time Magazine, who has a great, epic piece this week about the history of Mad Men, which is coming to an end Sunday night on AMC. I'm going to talk to him about that in about 15 minutes, but what do you have for us on the movie front today?
Well, I wanted to make a correction there. I believe Chicago has a guitar section with their horns. It's more of a horns band with a guitar section.
Yeah, the horns actually play out front.
Exactly.
And they're coming with Earth, Wind, and Fire. How about that? It's a double bill. They're going to be out at, what's it called now? The Hollywood Casino Amphitheater at Riverport.
That will be a great show.
I saw them there with the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah?
With my in-laws.
I would go to see Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
I would love Earth, Wind, and
Fire. My wife and I already have tickets. We're looking forward to that. It's on July 31st, and there are still seats available. So what do you have for us on the movies?
I went to see Mad Max Fury Road.
Now, is this the same Mad Max that was once Mel Gibson?
Sort of. It's the same universe. They're rebooting it because George Miller, who has now directed all four of the Mad Max films, said too much time has passed. So, you know what? He can't find a way to make it a sequel, so forget everything you know about Mad Max. This is now Mad Max, and there are three additional movies planned.
Okay.
With Tom Hardy as Mad Max.
Well, this better be a hit if they're already planning three sequels.
I think it should be. We'll see if it isn't. It's rated R. That's important to note. It's a rated R action film. George Miller is 70 years old, and when you see this movie, you're not going to believe that someone his age could have directed this. I couldn't imagine the toll. They shot this movie for over 5 years.
Wow.
There's one scene in the movie that they shot for 168 days.
One scene?
One scene. 168 days it took them to get the scene the way he wanted.
Was Jenkins screwing up?
I think so.
Jenkins, he's everywhere.
Causing problems. So, Mad Max, it's a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Oh, I love the post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Your favorite. But it's a desert, and Mad Max is our character. We're following him. Gasoline is in very short supply, and humanity has been fractured. There are just little groups of people who have sort of minimal interaction with other groups in their immediate vicinity, but there's no large civilization anymore. And so people have descended into madness, is the best way to put it. This, everyone is singularly obsessed with one thing, survival. And for some people, that means getting home. But for Max, played by Tom Hardy, it means just living.
Now, the only thing I know about Tom Hardy is he was Bane, the character you could not understand in the last Batman movie.
What do you mean? Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Was that a,
what was that?
A Bane impression?
That was sort
there?
Of, yeah, that's sort of how he talks. But no, actually,
wait, I want to hear.
He
that
was
again.
Also in Inception. He was in Inception, one of the characters that went with Leonardo DiCaprio into people's minds.
Okay.
He's very good in this, but does not steal the show. The person who steals the show is Charlize Theron.
Oh.
Yes. She plays Imperator Furiosa. The names in this movie are spectacular, by the way. They are awesome.
That's good with the pesto sauce, by the way. Order it sometime.
Wow.
I love the names in this. She works in a way for the main bad guy in this movie, and she drives a truck to pick up fuel from another place to bring it back here so they can drive their crazy souped up cars. And she is missing one arm, has a robotic arm. It's kind of cool looking. But one day she decides she's going to take this warlord's breeders. It's these five young women that he is trying to have a junior warlord with. She says, I'm going to take you to my home and protect you. That's it. This movie is a 2-hour and 10-minute chase scene. Don't go in expecting a lot of dialogue. I think I read somewhere that Tom Hardy has like 18 lines in the entire film, and that's probably pretty close to the truth. When you see a normal action movie, there are sort of peaks and valleys. You get sort of exposition for 10 or 15 minutes and 5 minutes of action, then 20 minutes of talking, a little bit of action. This is exactly the opposite. This is 20 minutes of action, couple minutes of dialogue. 20 minutes of action, a couple minutes of dialogue. And so it is high octane. There are crazy stunts with cars. It's impressive. Every single car that you see on the screen is real. It runs. Most of the things that you see are practical effects. He didn't want to use a lot of CGI. See it in 2D because you're going to ruin it seeing it in 3D. But this is really a lot of fun. Warning, it's not a typical movie. There's very little plot intentionally. It's to focus on the fight for survival. There's not supposed to be a big plot. They're just trying to survive. You don't have to shoehorn in all these ideas. Just, it's about surviving.
Now, whenever I've seen a movie that takes place in a desert, I always get really thirsty. Did you get thirsty watching this movie?
No.
Because it's a desolate...
Actually, it may be because one of the main characters tells the poor people in his town, don't let water control you, and he like shuts off the water, so it might be, you know,
so that kind of subliminally went into your mind. And
wow,
you
they should try that
thirsty.
In California.
Exactly.
Yeah, 0 to 10 scale.
This is,
is it a true story?
This is a solid 8.
Based on a true story.
Oh, okay.
This is a solid 8.5, but it's going to have a limited audience because it's different. This is sort of an art house film wrapped around a $100 million budget.
All right, showbiz boy, prediction on the box office?
It'll probably come in third behind Ultron and Pitch Perfect 2. $37 million.
All right, there you go. When we come back, we'll talk Mad Men, which has its finale, or at least its final episode, this Sunday night.